Today is August 6th. I'm Dori Mincer, and I want to welcome everybody to the Boomers and Beyond Special Interest Group. Just a reminder, we meet on the first and third Tuesday of each month at 12 noon Eastern Time, or 9 a.m. Pacific Time, or 11 a.m. Central Time. And our next SIG will be August 20th. And I'm actually at the moment planning to have it be just an open SIG so that we all can catch up and talk about what we're all doing and also generate ideas for future SIGs. I like to do that every so often, and it seemed like the one coming up on August 20th was a good time to do that. I want to also remind everybody that on the fourth Tuesday of each month, I have my interview series, Revolutionize Your Retirement, How to Create a Fulfilling Second Half of Life, where I interview experts. And on Tuesday, August 27th, I'll be interviewing Dr. Ruth Nemzoff, who's a sociologist and author of two really terrific books. And her topic is going to be incorporating both books. It's going to be Don't Bite Your Tongue and Don't Roll Your Eyes. Instead, develop strategies for making good relationships with your adult children and your in-laws. So I hope all of you will join us. It's a free call on the 27th, on the fourth Tuesday. Sign up will begin on the 20th, the week before, and you have to sign up at www.revolutionizeretirement.com. And even if you're not available that particular day, but you're interested in the topic, sign up, and that way you'll get the recording information afterwards. For today, I have the delight to introduce Bart Astor, who's a recognized expert in life transitions and elder care. His new book, The AARP Roadmap for the Rest of Your Life, Smart Choices About Money, Health, Work, Lifestyle, and Pursuing Your Dreams, was released in May 2013 as a joint venture between AARP and John Wiley & Sons, and it's been number one in Amazon's retirement planning category since its release. His unexpected personal journey led him to write his best-selling book, Baby Boomer's Guide to Caring for Aging Parents, which is now in its second printing, and he's critically regarded for being today's must-have healthcare resource. The book is critically regarded for being today's must-have healthcare resource. Bart has appeared on numerous TV and radio shows, including ABC's Good Morning America, PBS's Marketplace, and Rick Edelman's The Truth About Money. His perspective comes from personal experiences, and as he says, both good and bad ones, and sometimes that's what matters most, the personal experiences. Bart has written 11 other books, numerous articles, testimonies, grant proposals, training and technical manuals, white papers, and website content on a variety of subjects, including elder care, student financial aid, college admission, insurance, buying a home, and corporate social responsibility. He was also the publisher and founder of the College Planning Quarterly. So I'm delighted to have Bart here today. There certainly are so many incredible books out now about retirement. And, you know, as you know, the Life Planning Network, of which many members who are part of this SIG have contributed, and in January we had a book that's come out called Live Smart After 50. And they're similar but different, and it's exciting to think about, you know, how in a kind of collaborative way we can, you know, highlight and help all of these books so that people out in the world have these wonderful resources available. So, Bart, can you tell us a little more about kind of what got you so interested in this area of life, and why don't we start with that, and then we can talk a little more about your book.
Sounds great. Hi, Dori, and hi, everyone. Hi. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to speaking with you and answering questions as you may have them. You know, we're all boomers here, and or many of us are boomers. Of course, 80 million of us are boomers, and my perspective has always been that I always have felt that we're kind of breaking new ground. Everything's been different than what the previous generations. I grew up in New York. It was everything was crowded. Every classroom was filled with people. Fortunately, my last name began with an A, so I always had a seat. But I know lots of friends of mine who had W's and Y's and Z's. They often were sitting on the windowsill because our homerooms were 40 students plus, and the classrooms weren't big enough. And we didn't, so my generation, or our generation, you know, we were paving new ways. The turbulent 60s, we were exploring. We were doing things not always constructively, but we were exploring. And we made a lot of mistakes. We made a lot of, but we also really pushed the world, I think. You know, I like to think that we've done just so much good. I mean, we think about what life is now compared to the 50s and 60s and how much more freedom we all have and how much more opportunity we all have. That's what I think we can take some credit for. So as I started thinking about where I am now, it occurred to me in my 60s that I don't know what's next. I know my father lived till he was 96, and he was an interesting role model. I learned a lot from him. Sadly, my mother died early, but you know, we didn't really have a lot of these role models because their life was so different than ours. So I started thinking about that, and then I went to there was a panel discussion in which Gail Sheehy was a panelist, and we all know Gail from Passages and Caregiving. And she's a wonderful person, and so I was chatting with her, but she was talking about when her husband was quite ill, he went through palliative care. And the palliative care doctor came out to see them and said to Clay, "Okay, Clay, what are your goals for this stage in life?" And here is this man who is, you know, quite ill, and I thought, what an interesting question. What are his goals for this stage in life? He had an answer. I don't remember off the top of my head what it is, but I realized that I did not have an answer. So I started thinking about that and asking questions of other friends and colleagues and peers and asking them, well, what are your goals for this stage in life? And we all started to realize that we don't know. We may not have goals at this stage in life. So I thought that was an interesting question to address, and so that's where the book came from.
That's great. And it's, you had said, or at least I was reading from the bio, that the prior books that you had done were more elder care. And so it sounds like, you know, there was that experience and then sort of kind of dealing with, I guess, your aging parents or your father perhaps in particular, and then somehow thinking about your own self in the 60s that led to deciding to write this book.
Yeah, this was different. It was a takeoff. It was quite different, actually. The others were very much hands-on how-to. Mm-hmm. You put your left hand here, you put your right hand there, and you do these things to help your aging parent. In fact, it was that experience was, well, we repeated it over and over again, actually. My father-in-law got quite ill. Then he died, and then my mother-in-law went through all of the process of, we're all so familiar with this, you know, I fall and I can't get up, and then needing more and more assistance, and we made all the mistakes. It's classic. We just make all the mistakes that everyone does, and at that time, there were not a lot of books on elder care. There were a handful, but not a lot, and so I wrote mine, and ironically, so did several other people around the same time, And so it was great. More and more people started having the experience and sharing their experience about the issues that we all face as our parents were getting older. My father, actually, we did not make those mistakes. It was wonderful. We had learned from the mistakes, and having written a book on it, I said, oh, okay, this is one mistake I'm not going to do, and I was very conscious of that. And when he did die, I mean, you know, his body just wore out. At 96, and he wore out. But I remember my wife and I had visited him. It was actually Father's Day, and we were visiting with him, and he was at that point in an assisted living facility. And he was saying, you know, I'm very content. Everything's okay. And I went, oh, that's good. I, you know, sort of like we didn't blow it this time. We did it right. And he died 2 weeks later. Actually, and somewhat surprisingly, but he just failed. His body just failed, and he had nothing left. So that was this book. What was interesting to me about this, when I first started talking with my publisher, Wiley, and then they pitched it to AARP because Wiley has the had the contract with AARP to do their books. We went around a little bit about what it would be, and it started out, you know, let's deal with the classic stuff of Medicare and Social Security and other insurance and, you know, the real hard stuff. But as we started getting further and further into it, we realized that some of the softer areas were coming out more strongly and was also not duplicative. Yes, we had to deal with, you know, Medicare and be up to date on that and Social Security and the finances. And but I actually, the book has insurance and finances about chapters, I don't know, 4 or 5, something like that. I originally had it as chapters 8 and 9 because I just didn't think that was the key parts. You know, we all know what we have to do financially. We have to plan. We have to do this. We have to crunch the numbers, and that's important. But I think there were a lot of areas that I hadn't thought about before, and just beginning to, things like legacy. You know, interestingly, Dori, the things that I know that you cover in the couple's retirement puzzle, and I know that is also in Live Smart After 50, because I've looked at them, and we say the same kinds of things, and it's kind of nice that we're all saying the same things.
Yeah, no,
so anyway,
I agree.
I was doing that. You know, so to me it was kind of an interesting, the approach of, well, sort of what's next? Where are we going on this? And then it did hit me. And one story I'll relate about this friend of mine who's in a wheelchair now. He had polio when he was a kid, one of the last ones, actually. And, you know, he was in the early 50s, he got polio. And then, sadly, he became one of those who had a recurrence when he got to be about 50 or 52 or something years old. And I met him at the dog park, walking our dogs and playing with the dogs, and he explained to me what he had gone through, and it really hit me that who we are is a lot based on our level of activity, what we're comfortable with, what we can do. And so I developed this level of activity scale to, I think, help guide people in decision-making about what their life will be. And so that's where I got – so Mitch, actually, who's also I feature him in the book and talking about, his level of activity actually increased when he got onto the wheelchair. Before that, he could barely get around. And now, once he got into the chair, he was going places. He was going to ball games. He was going to the dog park and bringing his dog to the dog park. What a wonderful change for his life.
It's such a great example. So can you tell us more about this level of activity scale? Because I think that's a really important concept that you have in the book, and sort of, you know, just elaborate more on it for us.
Sure. You know, what it is essentially looking at yourself, who you are, what you're comfortable with, your style of life. So we all know people who are extremely, extremely active. Let me preface this before and say, like you do in your book, in Retirement Puzzle, and so many others, we know that age is all relative. So it's not about the number. We all know people who ski in their 80s and run marathons and do all these things. But we also know people who are younger who, for various reasons, choose to or have no choice but to live a more sedentary life. I mean, it's somebody who's we know these type A types who, you know, they work 6-7 days a week, 10-12-hour days. They're on the go all the time, and they love it, and it's wonderful. And then they start saying, okay, they're going to change their life, and they're going to slow down and maybe even retire. But that's an interesting thing. So when they've gone on vacations to, you know, places, to the beach. They've gone to the beach and they love it for the week or two that they're there, but they're pretty active. Now they're choosing to retire or to slow down, And they say, oh, well, let's move to the beach because I've always loved it there. And they say, well, wait a second. I like vacationing there, but that's my lifestyle is pretty high intensity. So these are extremely high activity level people, and we all know who they are, and we see them. And for them to then choose a lifestyle that would be for the next 20, 30, 40 years of their life, something they've never done before, that's a radical change that my guess is most people are not going to be comfortable with. So looking at who you are and your lifestyle, it seems to me who we've been all our life is pretty much the same. We're going to be the same for the rest of our life as well. So I developed a scale, and it's a scale, you know, that you can imagine it. It's got, you know, a number of steps, number of differences, eight different types. And I just give examples of the kinds of people. So obviously you start with extremely high, the type 8 personality, and then a very high energy where you go to the gym, you engage in full cardio workout. Often you play tennis or you play golf and you walk the courses. You don't take a golf cart. You participate in a lot of athletic events. And it goes down the scale to more moderate and then even less so, and then a minimal amount of energy with either because you choose to or because you're limited physically. And it comes down to the sort of bottom one where, you know, you're very limited. You can move around, but only either on crutches or a walker or even a wheelchair. You might work still part-time or not at all, but your lifestyle is going to be very sedentary. And so where you are on that scale is, as I said before, often what the rest of your life is going to be, unless you choose to change that. And like my friend Mitch, who went into a wheelchair to increase his level, I've done something similar. At my midlife crisis, I decided to train and do one of the AIDS rides. In this case, it was a ride from Raleigh, North Carolina to Washington, D.C. It was about 350 miles over a four-day period through the mountains. And I'll tell you, I was totally out of shape. I was overweight, out of shape. And so I trained for 6 or 8 months and with a lot of help. And I was able to do that. And I, in that sense, I increased my level of activity.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example. It's interesting because, oftentimes, and I'm just thinking and what happens in couples too, that, you know, one person's energy level may change or the knee or the hip or the whatever, and the other person is still, you know, raring to go and, mm-hmm. you know, it's either needing to rethink dreams, but also just sort of think about where you are in relation to the activity, each of you, and how, as an individual, single, or as part of a couple, how to deal with these different activity levels. And it's true that sometimes our level of activity increases if we allow ourselves to use the wheelchair or a walker or some kind of thing like that, mm-hmm. versus struggling so much. I mean, it is helpful to think about that. You know what I'd like to do? It's a small group, but I kind of would like to open it up. I know we have a number of other areas to talk about, but just to see, you know, if people have any thoughts or comments so far. I'm going to open it up, but just remember on this line, it's *6 to mute yourself. So if there's any background noise, *6, and then it's *7 to unmute yourself. So if you have comments or questions, say who you are and where you're from. Okay, so I'm going to hold on 1 second. Let me get this set up. Okay, everyone's unmuted. I just wanted to, before we kind of move on, because as you know, Bart, we have, you know, the Boomers and Beyond SIG are people who, many of them are members of the Life Planning Network, which I've told you about. I know you've gone to one of the meetings. And many of the people are part of the Live Smart book or have done other books. So we have, in a sense, the choir here, you know, people who are thinking about these issues, as you said earlier. So any thoughts, comments? Just to start, say who you are. *7 to unmute if you were muted. Anybody want to offer anything? Hello? No?
Hi.
We can. Oh, okay. Say who you are, please.
Hi. This is Diane from
Washington. Hi, Diane.
Yep. And, you know, the notion that you just shared is so helpful. I'm in touch with a relative who has a walker that lets her sit down, but it's still very limited. And she's been pretty homebound. And this is just a helpful thought that if she went to the next level of a wheelchair, she could be out and about. So it's very helpful.
It's interesting. I have another friend who, as a young woman, she was in a car accident and broke her back, and she had been on crutches and braces for her whole life. She was just 70. And she started really deteriorating in the last few years, and she had resisted a wheelchair for so long. It was painful for all of us, and her pain was extraordinary. I mean, you could imagine, the kinds of nerve pain that she went through with, but she kept on pushing herself, and it was great while she could. And she is so much happier when she finally gave that in, just said, "Look, this pain is ridiculous. I can't do this anymore." She's in a chair, and she gets around. She can drive. She can go here. She can go there. You know, it's an interesting thing. It's that's that step that we've all dreaded, I think. You know, oh my goodness, our bodies are deteriorating. How many of us have some back pain of some sort? You know, everybody. And so to accept who you are, where you are in this level of activity scale, I think it's important in the kinds of choices that we make. Where you want to live, your finances, the kinds of activities you do, whether you can continue to work, but it might be different kinds of work. If you choose to volunteer, there'll be some positions in a volunteer job that you just physically can't do, and you need to know that. So when you're making the choice, you need to know who you are. Look, this is about everything we do in life. The more we know about ourselves, the better our decisions are going to be. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree, Diane?
Oops, is she still there?
Yes. There was background noise.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely. It is the resistance sometimes that's the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Any other questions or comments before Bart goes on? Just say who you are. All right. Well, why don't we? I'm going to keep it unmuted now, so that if you have background noise, *6 and then *7. To come on. We're a small group, so my hope is there'll be kind of interaction along the way. So, Bart, I know that you also talk about successful and rewarding second adulthood, and again, these are concepts that I think we all, probably people on the call, know about, but can you talk a little sort of how you see second adulthood and what are some of the common challenges we face?
Sure.
And sort of how you've been dealing with that.
Not well, I might add. Well, again, there's this age thing. You know, we have to stop doing this. I think it was in one of the online groups. I've been seeing this ongoing discussion about using the word age and or old. All of those. Terms that we react with, our skin just, and our hair stands on edge. We hear that, I'm getting older.
When people say senior.
Oh, I love senior. You see, when the last job I had before I just left this position, I was a senior consultant. I thought I finally reached the pinnacle. I was a senior consultant. So the second adulthood, we've tried to come up with terms, and we know that there's a childhood, there's an adulthood, And then there's this older age thing. People have called it third age. People have called it who knows what, you know. And but we're older. We are 50 plus. It is no specific date, and but it's definitely 50 plus. And you know, the kids are grown. We've been adults. Our careers are, if not already peaked, certainly close to peak and waning at this point, probably. Again, I'm talking very generally. You know, there are many differences with people, and that age could be, you know, it could be in the late 60s. My father kept working until he was in his 70s. He was a lawyer, and so he was able to do the kinds of work that he did. It didn't matter his age as long as he could sit and write. So there's this second adulthood where I think it's different than when we were in our 30s and 40s. Our families are grown. We now may have grandkids, and our frame of reference is different. We're no longer looking at, we may not be as ambitious. We may be looking at other things, such as our legacy, such as smelling the roses. And this is where I started saying, okay, we may not have any goals. You know, we always had those goals. We were going to, you know, we knew what we wanted to be when we grew up. It was, you know, doctor, lawyer, firefighter. For me, it was always shortstop for the New York Yankees, and that remained for a long time. I finally gave that one up just recently, of course. But now that Derek Jeter is hurt, maybe I can still do it. But we had these goals. After it was what we want to be when you grow up, it became which college you're going to go to or getting into a college. And then it's getting a job and getting a better job, having your family. But now what? And so it was hard for us to start at this point setting goals. And I didn't know I still don't really know what my goals are. I've started to realize some of them. And it wasn't just the small little thing, oh, yes, I was going to complete this AIDS ride, this long bicycle ride. That was a nice little goal. And it's not just a bucket list. I don't want to compare it to completing your bucket list, although I just read something very interesting about, and this is something that I want to explore more. Somebody wrote about being 30. And, of course, remember when we were growing up, you never trusted anybody over 30. But now this is her 30 list. She wanted to have done this by the time she was 30. So maybe now we have to have, by the time we're 50, dying with 60, time we're 70, or by the time we reach something else. So maybe there's a new kind of way of looking at, not bucket list, but what happens when we're 65. Because there are significant events that happen at 65 and 66. Those two, I think those two in particular, because of Social Security and Medicare. But there's a big challenge for all of us too. We're going to have 20, 30, maybe even 40 years more of life. To not have any goals or anything we're leading toward, I think that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, I think that we've all, I know many people on the call kind of know about that too. And again, in the Live Smart book and in the couples book too, thinking about that. And, you know, when you were talking before too, I was thinking about Mary Catherine Bateson's book, The Composing of Further Life, because she really talks about this whole second adulthood and what's different. And, you know, there's so many ways to think about it. And it's an exciting period of time to think about these bonus years and how to use them.
It's interesting. The bonus, it is a bonus, certainly compared to what our parents and grandparents were.
Right.
You know, the fact that if they lived to be in their 70s, that was pretty unusual. Now we're routine leaving in our 80s and 90s. Again, barring illness and sudden changes that happen. But most of us, I think, what the average age now is if. Something about if you are 60 now, 65 now, the actuarial tables say you're going to live to be 90 or in your 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, something like that. So we're
yeah,
we're talking 20, 30 years.
Right. And also there's the research that says by the time you reach 65, that it's really only 30% genetics and 70% lifestyle choices. So it's what you, nutrition or exercise of your mind and body and spirit.
Yeah, and we're not going to sit around and eat bonbons, that's for sure.
Right.
We never have. And maybe, again, as boomers, we wanted to change the world. And I can't imagine that we boomers are going to now all of a sudden stop trying to change the world. We continue to do things, and we keep looking at new ways of doing things. We are trying to keep up with the millennials who just, boy, you know, they're really changing the world very rapidly. And that's, you know, I think it's very exciting. I love that these millennials are out there pushing every envelope and asking, well, this we can do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me. It's wonderful.
Right. Yep, that's true.
It's but scary, too, don't you think, Dory? Don't you think it's, I mean, it was like my father couldn't handle, what is this internet stuff, you know? and the millennials are just doing it so differently. I mean, in every facet of our life, it's they only know cell phones.
That's true. And growing up with a computer is so different than, you know, than the experience that we had. But, you know, it's sort of like, you know, life keeps going. it's a challenge, and it's keeping all of us challenged, I think, to learn the new technology.
I hope so. I hope people get turned on by it. I've always felt that, you know, it's scary. Change is scary. We all know that. It's difficult. It's challenging. We don't know what's up ahead. But I think that it's the only place that we grow from when we don't know. If we know the answer, we're not growing. We're always going to be doing the same thing. If we're just accepting that I don't know, but I'm willing to try, and it's always been my philosophy, just try it. And, you know, if you try it on, if it fits, it's yours. If it doesn't fit, well, then you try something else on. And some of these things are we don't understand, but we try. I feel like I'm very computer literate. I've been very heavily involved. I do all of the social media, because we have to when we're promoting books. That's the new way of life. And I don't necessarily understand all or why we all have to tweet and post and connect and do all these things, whether it's effective or not. But the millennials do. And that's how they live their life.
That's true. Well, let me just shift a little bit to another area that I think you talk a lot about in the book, when you talk about the transition from full-time work and discuss living on a reduced income. Can you talk a little about sort of some of the ways that you're suggesting people accomplish that, and sort of how to kind of think about moving in that direction, if people
sure.
do? I mean, I know many people aren't wanting to retire, and some can't afford to. And, you know, I just think it's an interesting area.
Yeah, it is. And I wish there was an easier way, but I think the only way is to crunch some numbers. The more that you know about your situation financially, the better off you're going to be. Now, that's not to say that you'll just determine that you have less than you need more. But if you know what it is, then you can at least deal with the fact that there's a shortfall. And for most of us, there is going to be a shortfall, unless we've really been fortunate or have really packed away a lot of money. Between Social Security and the investments on our income, the income off of our investments, there's probably going to be a shortfall based on the current lifestyle. And I know a lot of financial planners use a round number to say, look, you know, when you're figuring out your budget, figure out about 70% of what you've been living on is probably what you're going to need for the future. And first of all, I totally disagree with that number. I think it's too low, and it's based on some outdated thinking. I started realizing that that thinking is based on the fact that we're not continuing to increase our investments because, you know, we're not adding to our retirement fund, so that's a big chunk. We're not working, so therefore we're not adding to FICA, so that's another chunk. And our, you know, our costs are less because we're not commuting to work and we're not buying all this new clothes for work, is, you know, for typically, and a few other reasons like that, and that's outdated. I actually started realizing that what we need to do is figure out what is our current budget, and then instead of taking the 70%, it's more like 82% of what it is. And it may even be higher than that, but on average, I started thinking that it's about 82%, and that's going to change over time, but for your early slowing down years or retirement years, when you're healthier, presumably, mm-hmm. When you're still active, more active than you probably will be when you're in your 90s, you probably need more like 80 to 85% of your current budget, because you have to plan for the next 20, 30 years, so you may continue to add to your retirement fund. You may be working part-time, so you're still contributing to Social Security. Even if you're taking Social Security, you can still be, you know, contributing to FICA and Medicare. So that was a different way of looking at it, realizing that we need more. That's going to even increase the shortfall more. And again, there's no other way around it. You start crunching numbers and you say, here's the shortfall. I've been living on a round number, let's say, for, you know, given all of your expenses, including all your travel and vacation and living expenses, just round number, whether it's realistic or not, doesn't matter. Let's say it's $100,000. So in retirement, and you've been earning $100,000, so life's been good. Now all of a sudden you're going to be you're not earning $100,000. It could be you're earning $20,000 or $30,000 or even $50,000 or $60,000, and your budget's going to be more like $70,000 or $80,000. You've got a shortfall, and then you figure out how do I meet that shortfall? And here's again where I disagree with some of the typical financial planners. They look at budgeting as a diet, and I don't. I look at it as an opportunity to set priorities. So I don't look at fixed and variable expenses. I look at what's mandatory and what's discretionary, and I get to decide what's mandatory. For example, my wife is a gym rat. She loves going to the gym. For me, it's for her, it's mandatory. For me, it's more discretionary, but, you know. So for her, it's a mandatory expense. So, yes, so gym dues is important for us. So she will lower something else if she needs to in order for her to maintain the lifestyle that she really wants. And I think that's what we have to do as we get into our either pre-retirement or retirement years, figure out where we are. Again, always the more we know, the information's power, the better off we'll be, and then make choices based on knowledge.
I think that's an excellent point. Let me open it up again. Thoughts, questions, comments? Say who you are. And remember, if you did mute yourself, it's *7 to unmute. Comments, thoughts? We have a very quiet group today.
I hope it's because they're all really thinking about, they're going back and crunching their numbers.
Right.
Find out.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, is that Mary?
Hi. Yes, this is Mary Raju out in California.
Great, thanks.
Bart, I haven't read your book, but I do have a question about some of the information that you've just been sharing about setting priorities and looking at what you need for the future. Could you talk a little bit about what tools might be in your book for looking at some of those kinds of issues?
Well, you know, there are there are a million online websites that will help you do budgets. In a book, certainly in a hard copy book, you know, financial planning is not going to happen in a small little book. It's so individual. It's so one-on-one, and it's so interactive. But there are great, you know, any of the retirement planners will have access to great web material and spreadsheets to really do that. I think, you know, AARP has some, and I include things, you know, projected costs and tables and things, and but it's a flat piece of paper, and you can't insert your numbers. Yes, there are worksheets about what your budget is, so you can put down, okay, here's my rent or my mortgage, and here's how much I pay for all of the home information, you know, whether it's insurance or and you can go down the list, but it's a piece of paper, whereas there are great resources, and you know, we happen to, having been in the education world, we had a lot of our monies went into TIA CREF, because we were in education, and so we use their resources at times. I've had a financial advisor for many years, was a friend first, and then she's actually the broker, and we have remained friends, and she's helped me a great deal in discussing the kinds of investments we wanted to make along the way, and the changes that were necessitated with the changes that happened recently, with the different bubbles that have happened. I have to say, when the tech bubble happened, I was very fortunate. My advisor, we were moving out, and we could sort of see it happening. So I very strongly encourage people to work with professionals. I don't have all the answers. This is not my expertise. I know some things, and yeah, we were playing a lot in the late 90s, you know, and almost like day trading. It was so much fun, you know. Every day we'd make money every day. It was fantastic, and sometimes we'd lose, but we'd make twice as much the next day. And gradually we started realizing what she did is help me take the profit and then play with house money. Sort of like the gambler who goes to Vegas and says, "Okay, you know, I'm going to make $1,000, and then I'm playing with that's all. I'm taking my original 1,000, putting it away, and now I'm playing with whatever my winnings are." So the worst case scenario, you go home with what you came with. So she helped me in doing that, and so we did those kinds of things because I think she's an expert, and I relied on experts. I think we have to rely on experts. It's so difficult for us to understand all the ins and outs. It used to be that in investing, you would invest for a lifetime, and you just put the money in and just watch it grow. Well, we know that's not the case anymore. It doesn't happen that way. You can't do that. You don't want to time the market, but you can't just let things sit and forever, because you've lost out to inflation. So I think working with experts, whether it's a financial expert, whether it's an insurance expert, you know, we got into insurance when we needed it, and some of us may still have these old insurance policies that we're still paying on that don't make any sense. So we have to revisit. So it's going to these professionals and saying, help me make the right decisions along the way. Does that make sense? Does that get to what you were talking about, asking about?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Well, I think what I was hearing in Mary's question, too, was, you know, in the book, are there tools? And you have kind of worksheets and things like that in the book. I think, is that what you were asking Mary, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
so
I don't
maybe
think that, you know, we have to include those worksheets because, look, you have to say what your budget is and what this, and they're there.
Right.
But I really hope that it can be more interactive, and you'll look at it and you'll crunch some numbers, but it's a piece of paper, and then if you want to change, so instead of your rent being or your mortgage being $2,000. Now it's $1,000. Well, you got to kind of cross out everything and redo it, and use a spreadsheet. It's all done for you. And there's so many great tools on the web to be able to do that. And that's the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a number of the links in the book.
Yeah, there are some links. And, of course, because of AARP's connection,
right.
I always try to encourage people to use AARP. And they have some good tools. But so does TIAA-CREF, and so does UBS, and so does Payne Webber. I mean, so do all of them have, and you don't have to actually be a client of them to use the tool.
Right. Yep. Great. Other questions, comments from people? Just say who you are. Well, can you, I mean, if there aren't going to be questions, I'll keep going, but I'd love it if others do, but maybe to talk a little bit more about, so how do you approach it when, you know, people say, I don't even have any idea what I want to do with my time. I don't have any hobbies. I don't have any outside interests. I don't know what to do.
my very dearest friend in life, other than, beyond my wife, my very dearest friend, says, you know, he wants to die at his desk. And I really hope you don't. Because he said he has no outside interests. And I think, frankly, it's hogwash. He does. I mean, there are things that he does when he's not working. Now, it may not be a lot of time because he does work hard, but he likes to watch ball games. He likes to take some bike rides. They're not hobbies in the traditional sense that it's not collecting stamps or something. But of course, he has leisure time activities that he does. He likes going to open houses. I mean, what can I say? There are things that people like to do. So he does have these interests, but he said, that's just wasting your time. You know, sitting around doing nothing or watching TV is a waste of your time. Well, so what? Who's to judge? Why are you judging yourself if that's a bad thing to do? My sister-in-law, and I've used this example a lot, she did actually retire. She was a middle school principal. And she said, okay, I'm done. You know, she was, and if you know, a middle school principal, I mean, that is, you're done. It's very difficult. And so she decided to retire, and the whole family was like, oh, my God, what is she going to do? She's going to sit around, do crossword puzzles, and watch Nick at Night and Nick during the day and do nothing. And I said, so what? That's what she wants to do. That's what she will do that for a while. Until she no longer wants to do that. And then she'll stop doing that. But I encourage her first, don't make a judgment that what you're doing is bad. There's no reason. You don't have to judge that. And sure enough, after a while, she found a few things that she said, well, you know, I'd like to do this or that. She actually wound up now, she tried different, she tried being a docent at a museum. She decided she didn't like that. It wasn't that interesting to her. She learned the speech, and she learned a lot about it. She was originally a history teacher, so it came natural to her. But she actually started volunteering her time at Traveler's Aid at the airport. And so she goes to Dulles Airport a couple of times a week, and she stands at the Traveler's Aid, and she gets to talk to all these people who walk off the plane and don't know what they're doing when they get to Washington, D.C., and so she loves it. And gradually she started finding other things. And that's, she didn't have to judge herself. So my friend who was saying that he hoped to die at his desk, he does other things. I find it interesting that people who, if you sit on, if you go to the beach or you're reading, let's say you decide to read a Stephen King novel. You know, it's fun, it's great, it's interesting. People said that reading a Stephen King novel is better than or more productive than watching a Stephen King movie on TV. What's the difference? If you enjoy watching it on TV, that's fine. It's the same thing. Don't put a judgment. And so I have this whole thing about, hobbies and just accepting who you are, accept what you like to do. I use a quote that I heard many years ago. It's always easier to ride the horse in the direction he's going instead of trying to fight the horse. You like doing this, continue doing it until you still no longer like it, then try something else. And this is the time of life when we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many possibilities. It's true.
Oh, my goodness. Right now, there's so many. It's so great. You know, there's so many opportunities for continuing education. You can do it for credit, for not credit. You can take these MOOCs, the massive online open courses. You can go to your local colleges and take classes. You can just, I mean, there's all kinds of great opportunities. So, the sky's the limit, literally. And, you know, so I encourage people to do that without making judgments about what they do is good or bad.
You know, that just brings, just you're saying there's so many possibilities, brings a segue to another question that I'd love to be able to ask, and maybe people on the call could be part of the discussion, of we started with how many wonderful books there are out there, and you were even saying that when you published your Elder, Dealing with Elder Parents books, there were a number out there. It does make me just wonder, what are the possibilities of even kind of collaborating in a way? You've got a wonderful book. You know, I'm part of the Live Smart book. I have my book. Other people on the call probably have written other books. I think Bruce, I'm not sure if you're on the call, Bruce, but Bruce Frankel has written a book. I just wonder what opportunities there may be for all of us. And I know I told you about the Life Planning Network, and you met, I mean, in this group, many of the people on the call are part of Life Planning Network. I'd love a little bit of a discussion of, you know, what are ways, I mean, you're so fortunate that you have AARP. And as you just said before, that you
it's been a great help. What's
reference
great,
them.
Know?
Yeah, I mean, it's fabulous. So I just wonder what opportunities there are of developing heightened synergy. So people, you know, AARP knows about the other books that other people have written, and, you know, you become part of the Life Planning Network. I mean, what are some ways we can collaborate? And I wonder if other people on the call might have thoughts or ideas. I mean, I know we didn't talk about this as a possible question, Bart, but when you were talking about opportunities, I was just thinking there's just so many different ways to think about that issue.
Sure. I'd love to hear from people who have, you know, thoughts about ways to encourage each other. One thing I say, so I know that Carrie Hannon and Jen Cullinan have both been guests of yours. And
we,
Carrie, Jen, and I talk a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, partly it's because AARP did all three of our books, so we were sort of thrown together. But they're just... But there is a synergy there. Each book, we're not competing against each other, and we do have to be careful about that. I mean, the fact is, if people ask me, well, you know, which book should I buy? Well, guess what? I want you to buy mine, but also you should look at Jan's and Carrie's and yours. So there is a little bit of competition there, but we don't overlap totally. And that's the way where we probably can help each other.
Mm-hmm. People, are there people on the call that have thoughts or?
This is Don. I'm calling from Pickering, and I've joined an organization here in Ontario. It's not just here; it's also located in New York and a couple of other places.
Mm-hmm.
But it started here. Called the Center for Social Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm surprised at is there seems to be an assumption among a lot of the members that innovation and creativity in a social environment, if you like, I make our society more interesting, productive, successful, blah, 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 is the prerogative of the young. And I'm thinking, what a huge error that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being a senior myself, I find that there's a certain fire that burns when I see things, especially the same old mistakes being made again and again. could easily be avoided in some cases, or not so easily, but still worth it. And I just wondered if our author had any thoughts on that.
Great. On repeating the same mistakes that
well, and not
they're going
and
to repeat
contributing
the same
to the yeah the larger question, if you like.
Wouldn't it be great if they I'll do a very personal thing about this. We had an interesting conversation with the kids who are now in their 30s. And I have grandkids, and it's so wonderful and stuff.
Yeah.
But this was maybe 7-8 years ago, and we were talking about how the baby boom generation really changed the world, and they were saying, well, you're so arrogant. Do you think you did this? You think you did that? You're all so important, and how much did you really change? And then we just started looking at and said, okay, let's stop for a second and look at the family portrait. So we have multiple races in our family. It's like there was no way when we were growing up that our family portrait would look like that, that it looks like now. And so I think what we have to do is point out, and we are maybe our own worst salespeople, we have to point out the real changes that we have made. I mean, look how quickly the world has changed, even in things such as gay marriage. And I don't want to get into a politics of whether it's good, bad, or you support it or not, but the point is that within 2 or 3 years, we went from 70 or 80% being against it to now more than 50 being for it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge change. And so what we as boomers have always done is made those pushed for changes, and we have to recognize the things that we did that were really, really good. And
yep.
And to me, that's we're terrible salespeople because we're always being accused of being self-indulgent, and the last thing in the world I think we were, many of us, when we were out there screaming and yelling and picketing and rioting and saying, change the world, and many of us still do that, but we don't let people know that we do that. And but you go to these whatever marches there are, whatever protests, you still see some old folks over there doing that. So let's recognize that we continue to do this, and we may do it a little bit differently. We may do it one at a time, but we've seen monumental changes in just the last 50 years since we've been around.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think, Don, you raise just a really interesting question that could be a topic of one of the SIGs, too. I'd love to talk more with you of just, how to spur on the innovation and creativity as we age, for
drop
all of
the
us.
Line.
Jump
in and stop. Really,
yeah.
I'd like to. That would be very interesting. I mean, I've always felt you jump in. One of the things I did was I was an actor for a while, not a very good one, but I did try to make a living at it. And it was always the joke was, when the director asks you, can you tap dance underwater? Absolutely. You say anything to get the job, right? And then you quickly go and learn to tap dance underwater. But we have to keep doing that and not worrying about what we look like. And if we can't come to grips with who we are in our 60s, I mean, we're not 14 years old anymore where we have to worry about what we look like to everybody. This is who we are. So it's a great time to be able to just try something and fail at it. So what?
So let me again open it up. I know it's 1 o'clock, and I want to honor that. Some people have to leave, but I know that Bart had said he could stay for a little bit more, and I'd love to just hear from other people on the call, other thoughts on either some of the issues or that issue of, how we could, maybe collaborate more, or anything, thoughts on that? I don't know how many people are still on the call, but anybody want to pipe in? Just say who you are. *7 to unmute if you're muted. Any thoughts? So star 6 to have muted yourself or star 7 to unmute. I know there's still a number of people on the call. Any thoughts? Any comments?
Hi, Dori.
Hi.
Hi, this is Eileen.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi, from Virginia. And I kind of like the idea of collaboration. I think that it's such a, with 80 million baby boomers, we certainly have lots of people interested in this topic. So bringing
mm-hmm.
a lot of individual books and
mm-hmm.
speakers to present, you know, for the public, I think would be just such a great idea, and especially in the, you know, metropolitan, you know, Washington area where there's a lot of decisions being made about our health and about our future. I'd just like to
yeah.
think more about that. And, you know, Bart, maybe you'd be liking to, you know, work to coordinate something.
Yeah, it'd be
great
interesting
idea.
When you were saying, I started thinking about you know, I've never been to one of those big AARP meetings or something like that. I always wondered, you know, what would that be like if we had a sort of a, you know, a life planning, you know, a live smart after 50 kind of convention or convening of some sort. What would we highlight in there, and would it spark anything? And do they already do that? I mean, I don't know. Are there these groups that meet and have these large convenings in certainly metropolitan areas, because it's hard for people to travel. You know, I'm not going to travel to Las Vegas for because there's no money for this. Unless you're working for an organization that will pay your way, I mean, it becomes difficult.
Has anybody on the call been at any of the AARP? I actually didn't get to the one that was in Boston, and I was sorry I didn't, but I think it could be a wonderful idea if it hasn't been there, of getting, you know, kind of a Live Smart After 50 roadmap, you know, your book, our book, the couple's book, you know, Jan, Carrie, Bruce's
exactly.
book.
Well,
I mean,
what we should
do
is write to AARP and suggest that they did this and feature us at their next annual meeting.
So you might have a little more clout because you're
you
know, through AARP, so maybe you could include us.
Dori. They're a huge organization, and it's a very siloed organization. So I talk to my, you know, two or three people here, and I talk to the marketing people, and I talk to the publishing people. But, you know, I don't get in. But there's the whole policy institute that I'm not a part of. And so they're very, it's an interesting group, and I think that when you deal with those kinds of convenings, as the latest term is, it becomes, it's, you know, it's hard to break into being a speaker or this. They have professional planners that do these things. But I just wondered if this, you know, all of the Live Smart After 50 group, the you know, the life planning people.
Well, and I think, Eileen, were you starting to say something else, Eileen? I think I interrupted you, and I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, I have a colleague that's, you know, very instrumental in AARP in the Virginia area. She may be a contact to kind of launch further investigation. But imagine the people that, you know, we could reach with the whole concept of, like, planning for this next stage of life, and not only, you know, read AARP, but, you know, reach other people that may not, you know, read AARP or read other things, but are interested in the very topic, like the couples, you know, how do we as a couple, you know, move into the next stage? How do we, you know, on the various experts, I just think it would be just fantastic program to offer the public and reach so many people that would be interested. So,
and what I'd love to hear in that same kind of thing, excuse me, I wanted to say that, you know, the first thing that people say when they reach 50 is, oh my God, I'm going to get that ARP question, you know? we have got to turn around this whole thing that being 50 plus, 60 plus, or being older is a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing, you know. Of course, it beats the alternative, the old joke. But, you know, we have to turn that whole perception around that it's not about retirement. it's about making the second half of your life, or a friend of mine calls it the back nine. Really, it's living the back nine, and we can't make it a negative thing. But AARP membership is, I'm too young for that. That's silly.
Can I tell a quick story?
Go ahead. Who's that?
Really, it's Dawn here. And this really illustrates.
Yep.
It was occurring to me the last couple of minutes, but this brings it to a fore. I was at a speaking engagement where Jane Goodall was the guest. Now, you know her. She's the woman who worked with the gorillas, right?
Yeah.
And, or chimpanzees, sorry. Never mind. Ape.
Right.
In Africa for a long time. And well, she can't do that anymore, really, because she's in her 70s. And, you don't want to be cramped in the dense bush all day. But she's become a huge advocate and travels the world speaking about it and writing books and trying to save the dwindling populations in Africa. Anyway, she was talking about, the obstacles and so forth. And one of the young people in the audience asked her the question, how are we going to get rid of all of those old people who are standing in the way of us, really doing something seriously in conservation? I'm thinking this woman is in her late 70s, but she doesn't look old to these people.
Yeah.
Well, that was so fascinating.
Yeah, well, when somebody says, I was talking to Bart, he was that elderly gentleman over there, that's not something we ever want to hear.
No. But, if you're engaged, they don't think of you as old.
Mm-hmm. Well, and 70 is the new 70, as they say. I mean, it's not old anymore. So.
No.
Other comments, thoughts, questions before we wrap it up? Anyone else? Well, I want to thank you very, very much, Bart, for being here. I think it's terrific that your book is out, and I've had the chance. I haven't carefully read the whole thing, but I've been able to, read through most of it.
You mean you haven't read every single word, Dory?
I have to admit that I haven't read every single word, but I've written. I've read a
My
lot.
My wife has only read the first 40 or 50 pages, so don't worry about it.
I read a lot of it, and I know I sent you the Couples Retirement Puzzle and Live Smart, but I would love to see more kind of discussions and collaboration and all too. But I just am really appreciative of your taking the time. I didn't say at the beginning, but Bart had been in touch with me after Jan was on the call, and as he said, Jan Cullinane, who's written the book The Single Woman's Guide, and it's also through AARP, and so that's how Bart kind of got to me. And I just think there's so much good stuff out there, and I do see the SIG as a way of kind of exposing everybody to all of the wonderful things out there, but I'd love to see some more kind of synergy and collaboration so that when people are asked what are the good books, we can say Roadmap for the Rest of Your Life, Live Smart After 50, Creating a Further Life, Single Woman's Guide, Carrie's book about the best jobs for over 50, yeah. Bruce's book, all of ours, just to celebrate all of our work and just trying to figure out how to bring it, all of it, to, to the 78 or 77 million boomers that are out there, 10,000 a day, turning 65 for the next, I think, 17 or 18 years.
And have each one of them buy each one of our books.
And have them buy each of them, yeah, absolutely. So, but I just want to thank you so much. And is there a final takeaway, Bart, that you would like to kind of end the call with?
That's interesting. Final takeaway. I guess so. To me, sometimes life brings the unexpected. Whether it's illness, injury, or lottery winnings, or something. But more hopefully, it's lottery winnings. But usually, we can see the ball coming right at us, right off the bat. And so, when it heads our way, we generally don't have time to figure out what we're supposed to do with the ball. We needed to have thought about what we're going to do before the ball was pitched. Every coach has always told me that. Before the ball is pitched, know what you're going to do with the ball, so when you do get it, you can do it. Well, if the ball comes to me, if I bobble it, well, that's an error. Errors happen, nothing you can do. But if I didn't know, if I didn't plan ahead, if I didn't do it with the ball, if I didn't know what I was going to do with it before, that was a preventable error. You know, that's where I let down the whole team. So I guess that's my life lesson is, you know, don't make the error that you could have prevented so easily just by not thinking ahead. That's my life lesson for me personally. That's what I live on.
Great. That's a good takeaway. It's the thinking ahead, planning ahead so that you don't kind of get into the second half of life by default.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Or not get into the second half by default.
Or not get into it. Right. Well, thank you so much. And just to remind everybody, you will get a link for the recording information. And for next time, as I said, on August 20th, I'm going to keep it open so we can just talk about what people are doing and generate some ideas for future SIGs. And again, August 27th, Ruth Nemtsov is going to be presenting on the Revolutionize Your Retirement interview series with experts to help you create a fulfilling second half of life. And you can sign up at least by August 20th. If it's before, I'll let people know. But at least by the week before, you can sign up at www.revolutionizeretirement.com. So enjoy the rest of the summer, and I hope many of you will be on the SIG call on August 20th. And thanks again, Bart, for being with us.
Thank
today.
You, Dori. I loved it.
Take care. Thanks.
Right, bye-bye.